Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by talk show hosts Jim Bohannon, Kurt Smith, and Ray Hanania. Our program tonight coming to you from the Sirius XM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to email us a comment. Our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, yesterday afternoon, President Obama asked the members of the House to answer the call of history, and several hours later, led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, they did that. They passed the Democratic-passed health care bill. There was one Republican who jumped on. There were 39 Democrats who did not fall in behind their leader. But they came up with a historic health care bill. It now has to go to the United States Senate. It's not law yet, but again, it was pretty significant history yesterday in Washington, D.C. They passed the bill at 11 o'clock at night, and let's take a look at some of the specifics of what was in that bill. It requires every individual to obtain health insurance. It requires all but the smallest employers to provide health coverage. It vastly expands Medicaid. It provides federal subsidies for people to buy insurance from private or government companies. It also, as we move to the next graphic, it eliminates controversial abortion language. It bars the public plan from covering abortion. It prohibits people who receive federal subsidies from purchasing private plans that cover abortion. It also requires every insurance company that wants to deny coverage. They can't do that anymore if there's pre-existing conditions. It places lifetime limits on coverage. It prohibits abandoning people when they become ill. Insurance companies would be required to justify proposed premium increases to federal regulators. Also, as we continue, within 4 years, it establishes a new health care system in the United States. Business payrolls in excess of $500,000 would be required to offer insurance or pay fines as much as 8% of the payroll. If you're an individual, you would be required to obtain insurance or pay fines as much as 2.5% of your income. Furthermore, states would be required to extend Medicaid coverage to the poor to 15 million people, but not to illegal immigrants. Federal subsidies would be available to low and middle income individuals who could not afford health care insurance, and the costs, savings, and taxes involved in what Congress, at least the House, did yesterday, 36 million Americans would be covered. Medicare would be cut by more than $400 billion over the next decade. A 5.4% surcharge on annual incomes of over $500,000 for individuals or $1 million for families would also be imposed. And that's what the House did at 11 o'clock last evening. Jim Bohannon, one of the country's best talk show hosts, I know you've spent a lot of time debating this with your audiences. You're pretty close to the Beltway from where you do your program. What's the overall take based on what they did last night? How do you think your listeners are going to be responding come tomorrow night when you go on the Westwood One radio network?
They are going to be unhappy. They are going to look upon this as the worst of the two alternatives. Whatever the Senate winds up with finally will probably be considered the lesser of two evils. And the big question, of course, is what finally comes out of a conference committee. I am just hard-pressed to believe that in the long run, any bill which includes a major public option is going to get the votes necessary to pass the Senate.
Kurt Smith also joins us. He, too, is a talk show host for XM Satellite Radio and also a former speechwriter to President George Herbert Walker Bush. You're a Republican, hails from upstate New York. What's your reaction to this?
Well, I'm a lapsed Republican. I'm looking for a party. I have a lot of company. I think this is a Byzantine, convoluted avalanche of federal intrusion. It is legislation that, according to every poll, the American voter does not want and should not have to countenance. I don't think it's a done deal because the momentum in terms of public opinion is squarely against this turkey. It now goes to the Senate, the Republicans and conservative and moderate Democrats, if they can get enough votes, in essence, to talk this legislation to death. The president is already running into the new calendar year, which could be the kiss of death at this point, largely because of this for the Democratic Party. I think if you're in Manhattan, perhaps, and in Georgetown and in San Francisco, you're just alive with joy. Otherwise, this is extraordinarily disappointing and disconcerting.
So
this is not what the president promised last year.
So politically, you think this seals the fate of the Democratic Party?
I think the stratum that I would least like to belong to in America is the moderate to conservative spectrum of the Democratic Party. How they can defend this extraordinary assault on the middle class. The old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Americans like their health care insurance. If you've got 26 or 36 or 47 million uninsured, the president can't make up his mind, fix it for them.
Ray Hanani also joins us, talk show host, veteran journalist in Chicago. Ray, your reaction to this and how your listeners are going to respond when you go on the air tomorrow.
Well, I talk mostly to Chicagoland audience, so they love the plan. They like the public option. I think it's historic. I remember everybody saying this was dead on arrival 3, 4, 6 months ago, and here it is back passing the House. I'm pretty confident they're going to pass something. I tend to disagree a little bit with Kurt, of course, because I think we do need a government option alternative to the health insurance industry, because I think the problem has been with the health insurance industry. Mainstream Americans who don't have health problems don't realize how bad it is until they have to go to the hospital and get care. And that's when they realize that the insurance industry needs to have some pressure to keep them from doing what they
Jim?
Do.
Although you could already have options other than, say, the two or three companies that may exist in some states, if you simply invoke the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution and ban states from denying companies the right to sell their insurance in a certain state and get rid of these ridiculous state regulations that say if you are going to sell insurance in the state of whatever, that you must include plastic surgery for your pets or whatever.
What is based on what the House passed, obviously, as we mentioned, it's now going over to the Senate. What is the one, two, or three things in here, based on what I've just articulated in the last couple of minutes in describing the House bill, what do you think is going to be the first thing thrown out absolutely by those in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans?
Well, I think those who oppose the bill would like to start over. They would like to scrap the entire thing. I do believe the sheer effrontery and the size and the cost and the scope. We are looking right now at a $9 trillion deficit in the next 10 years. We have received from this allegedly fiscally conservative president, as he promised us he would be last year, a $10 billion bailout, a $787 billion stimulus program. He would like cap-and-trade legislation. This is billed right now by his own congressional budget office at least $1 trillion. And, of course, we know, like Mopsy, how federal programs tend to grow.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Your reaction to what the House of Representatives did last night. They were working late on Saturday night, and they were not watching Saturday Night Live.
The best age for your child to learn to read is during the first 5 years of life. Kathleen discovered this fact firsthand.
A friend of ours recommended the Your Baby Can Read series when we had our first child, Jacob. Never thought anything of it. We plopped him down in front of it.
Your Baby Can Read worked amazingly well.
When Jacob was 3 years old, he was reading at second grade level. He turned 5 in July, went to kindergarten, and in 3 weeks he was moved to first grade.
Kathleen knows it's no coincidence.
Because we have 3 children and all are reading on a high level. School is very easy. Straight A students, maybe 1 or 2 children, but all 3, probably a successful video. So bam, it worked.
Did Kathleen have to work at it?
that?
No, I didn't have to do a thing. Your baby can read definitely gives them a life skill that can never be taken away from them. It's been invaluable.
For a limited time, you can receive a completely risk-free trial of the Your Baby Can Read program. Call now and we'll also include three free learning gifts with your risk-free trial. Call 1-800-508-3105. 800-508-3105. 800-508-3105.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for giving us a call. And let's go to Eduardo right now, listening to us on WLS in Chicago.
Yeah, how you doing? Great show.
Thank you.
You know, healthcare industry is the fastest growing industry, the one that's adding jobs. Now, my colleagues are going to be added to that 10.2.
Why?
Well, because the government's going to be paying cheaper premiums on insurance than we are.
Is that the way you see it, Ray?
No, I'm going to tell you. I think the health industry, the health insurance industry is going to have a problem. But when I don't think healthcare workers at hospitals are going to have problems. And that's one confusing issue that sometimes we talk about. This isn't reforming healthcare and hurting doctors and nurses. I think it's the industry, the insurance industry, that needs to be saddled. And that's what I think this bill does.
But Eduardo has a point. If you look at the 10.2, and he's referring, of course, to the unemployment rate, which I think many economists think will remain over 10% for a long time, even jobs that are being created, and this is his point, are not being created in the private sector. They're almost exclusively government jobs, including the medical sector. If you look at California and New York, both states, thanks to liberal policy, in effect figuratively falling over the cliff, the job loss there has been especially pronounced in the private sector. This will accentuate taxes on business.
But, Kurt, doesn't the 10% unemployment also justify the government stepping in, providing insurance? Because that 10% means that there's even more people without insurance and that they need it.
10% unemployment rate was passed in 1982. Ronald Reagan was president. He did the exact antithesis of what Obama is doing. He cut spending. He cut taxes. And as a result of that, for the next 15 to 20 years, we had the longest uninterupted prosperity, peacetime in American
didn't
history.
Didn't he also call Medicare a socialist experiment?
He said a lot
time,
of things, but he's also left office an historic president.
I like him.
The fact remains, quite frankly, here that we don't have to have a public option to handle this. There are any number of ways that you can cover those uninsured. Although I'm curious about one thing. Where are we going to find all the doctors and other health care workers who are going to cover all of these additional however many million it is who are going to be covered?
From around the world.
Probably. I think that's the answer. I don't know that's the one that pleases a lot
of people.
Jim, I bet
you have a great health care policy, right?
Because personally, I have a pretty good plan.
Right, because I'm going to tell you something. The people who have great health care who either haven't used it or the rock-solid gold-plated health care plans do not want the public option. But people that don't have great health care plans need something better than what they
have. Well, what about the 70...
All you need is some kind of a subsidy to pay for a private option for these people.
What about the 75 to 80% in poll after poll after poll who say they are delighted with their own coverage, don't change a thing? What do you say to them?
I think that they haven't been to a hospital for a major operation and then been told by the insurance company that they're not going to be covered.
So here's a guy listening in Austin, Texas, Alan on KLBJ. I think he wants to answer your question. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I'm a conservative. Very conservative, but I think the Republicans are wrong when they say 85% of the population is happy with their present health care insurance, especially small business people. I think they are paying like thousands of it's an enormous burden for them, and the rates keep going up. I honestly think that the only government employees are the main beneficiaries of the present system where the employer, where you have employer-sponsored health care insurance because the government just raises taxes when the premiums go up.
Well,
Jim?
Yeah. I still say that the best option here is subsidies to help people get a private option. There is no need for a government intrusion beyond providing for one thing, making it illegal not to cover pre-existing conditions. Another thing, making sure you can carry the coverage from job to job. And third, providing subsidies for those unable to afford.
So you like some of the things that are in this bill?
Oh, absolutely. We need to do some things. And certainly the coverage of pre-existing conditions and portability, those are things, if you put those two up by themselves, they would get 99% of the vote in both houses.
But why this blanket assault on the private sector and on how well health care has worked for the overwhelming majority of Americans in a Republican form of government? You have, if not the rule of the majority, a respect for the majority.
Because
the majority is not respected here. I mentioned polling data. That's not my statistic. That's John Zogby, and it's George Gallup, and it's the Harris poll. Overwhelmingly, Americans
I asked this question, and Ray, I'm going to ask you again.
Yeah.
Then you think that this is a Democratic death march.
I don't
you think
know.
They're
never underestimate the Republican Party's capacity to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. It is proven and irrefutable. Having said that, Republicans did extraordinarily well in Virginia and New Jersey, over the last week, not because of anything they did, but because of animus toward the president, personally in some cases and in policy cases more often. I don't think Democrats have learned a thing from that, with the exception of the 39 blue dog Democrats that voted no.
But the Democratic leadership in Congress is wedded to the notion of a stealth single-payer program, and that's what this is all about, the full knowledge and understanding the fact that a public option is going to drive out the private option, and you're going to have a single-payer within 10 or 15
Reed,
years.
But Harry Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, he's running for re-election. So he's not a San Francisco Democrat.
He's not even going to be a senator in January of 2011.
He has to be a little sensitive. Ray Ananias.
This bill has been strapped with all kinds of hot-button issues from abortion. I'm just surprised we're not arguing about gun control inside this bill. The fact is that I think we need to do something. It's wrong to allow the insurance industry to continue to do what they do, to put money in the pockets of senators and Congress. I know Joe Lieberman has a million reasons why he doesn't like these bills, and I hope it's not all in cash. Okay?
By the way, this bill would have never passed the House if Nancy Pelosi had not accepted the one amendment. There was one amendment offered by a Democrat,
right,
and that was on the abortion issue,
right,
which made took abortion off the table.
If they take public option out of this bill, I don't know if I can support it.
Given the philosophy of the Democratic Party, the cynicism and corruption, I would suggest, of this administration, and the fidelity of the Democratic base to abortion first, foremost, and always, does anyone here really think that proviso will be honored, and that is no money for abortion? I, for one, do not.
Well, it's not in there. They do allow individuals who want to, as I understand it, if you want to pay an extra premium, you could get coverage for abortion.
But the government will not subsidize it.
No. Right. The government won't subsidize it, but abortion is law. So I think we should deal with the law, but we're not dealing with the law. We're dealing with hot button issues.
If you have enough money, then you will be allowed to get an abortion.
But it's the law.
Let's go to Joe in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air coast to coast.
Hey, the Democratic death march was not the health care issue. It was when Barack Obama said that the $1 trillion he was going to spend was going to make unemployment stay below 8.5%. So now we're supposed to trust him with health care. Seems a little iffy to me. I'd like to see how that's going to work, if it works as good as the 10% unemployment deal.
That's a very valid point. He said, first of all, that we needed a stimulus so that the unemployment rate would not go over 8%. Boy, those were the good old days. And if we had a responsible media in this country that would hold him to account, I think that that would help as well. But as you look at this, a couple stories over the last several days in the Wall Street Journal, Peggy Noonan, in fact, basically saying, look, the president's gone down one track, which is socialized medicine, rework, and own 1/6 of the nation's economy. Most Americans are fixated on something called jobs. Jobs that they may be losing, jobs that their friends may be losing. And as a result of this avalanche of spending, I think if you look at polling data, Americans by and large have lost confidence in Barack Obama's judgment when it comes to tax and spend.
What is the Republican plan, either in the House or Senate? What is the Republican congressional plan to create jobs?
Well, of course, as opposed to health care?
Yeah.
By and large, I think it would be to reduce spending, to reduce the burden, if you would, on small business.
Take us through that cycle. How does that work?
Okay. Well, basically,
spending is reduced. Then what happens next?
business has to keep more of its money, and not simply corporate America, which I think has too often been the bailiwick of the National Republican Party, but the small business that creates five and six jobs. Not only have they been besieged by this flood tide of spending, but the regulations now in the healthcare are going to add to their bureaucracy, to their paperwork, and thus to their costs.
And
if you look at this administration, there is almost no one who has held a job high up in the private sector who would even understand what business is facing today.
Ray Hanania.
You know, first of all, I object to the use of socialism. I mean, the public option is such a small part of this bill. It's not socialized medicine. Well, I mean, for now. And listen, when we talk about the great deficit that we're putting up, who was it that built the deficit? And they're going to argue, say, oh, no, we had to do it.
Problem.
We had to fight the Iraq war. The deficit was never an issue in the past 8 years until suddenly we get a guy that wants to do something good for mainstream Americans, give them good health care, and suddenly we're being fought. And I think it's wrong.
Answer the question, though. With the stimulus package, with all the things that Barack Obama said he wanted to do, with all the millions of jobs he was going to create, what's your answer as the closest thing to a Democrat at the table?
I think he's in a very tough situation. I think he's doing everything
a tough situation, but again, it's not working.
His
plan's not working.
Well, not working is something that you say,
let Ray finish.
Not working means that, you know, we're at the end of the road. We're not at the end of the road. I think it
will work. 10.2, not working.
We've had 10% before, have we not?
We have.
Right. In 1982.
May I interject a couple differences? First of all, Ronald Reagan, who had inherited an ash heap of a country from Jimmy Carter.
Which is what Obama did.
There is a difference, however.
Don't ask me, please, to
defend George W. Bush, although I must say that Obama's spending makes W. look like Jesse Helms. But moreover, Obama, you know, whether you refer to him as the commander-in-chief or an adolescent-in-chief, every speech, almost without exception, he in essence says, hey, don't blame me. I'm not responsible for this. You know the mess that I inherited. At what point, like a little child and a parent saying, you know, you did this. Don't blame it on someone else. At what point does he accept responsibility?
And at what point does the prior administration accept responsibility? And the people that supported
it.
Richard
Nixon
doesn't accept it anymore.
So give Barack Obama
time. Don't go away.
Okay, that's $11.96. Whoa, what are you doing?
What? I'm giving you cash.
But you're pulling the little guy apart.
Oh, this? No, it's just the money I'm saving with Geico.
But he's the sack of money with the googly eyes. He has a face.
Yeah, but he's money. And now I'm spending it. Here, take a bill.
Oh, actually, that didn't seem to hurt him at all.
No, we do this all the time.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Nowadays, all sorts of people are changing their oil.
Motor oil?
Check.
Funnel?
Check.
Hey, champ, don't put the funnel on your head.
Doing your own oil change is a great way to save money. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on Castrol, Mobil 1, Pennzoil, and Valvoline, you could save even more.
All done. Piece of cake.
More people are changing their oil. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, they're changing where they get it, too. Save money, live better, Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's print ad for an identical product. See store for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Around the table this evening, we welcome a lot of old friends to this program. First of all, Jim Bohannon. He is the voice of Westwood One Radio Network with his own talk show host on the Westwood One Network five nights a week. You also do America in the Morning.
Right.
So you're a busy guy, five mornings a week. Right. So you work in the morning, you work at night. And in the meantime, once a year, he comes to Chicago because he is a past inductee into the Radio Hall of Fame. He was in for the big Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremonies last night. Again, a terrific job along with George Norrie. And you got your little Radio Hall
of Fame pin on there.
Always good to have it.
Thank you.
Good to have you in the Radio Hall of Fame. Always good to have you in Chicago. Kurt Smith is here as well. He is a member of the Radio Hall of Fame Steering Committee. He, too, was in last evening, and he had the honor of inducting the late Harry Callis, the voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, into the Radio Hall of Fame. Kurt is one of the most knowledgeable baseball historians, baseball broadcasting historians in the United States. He's written a new book called Pull Up a Chair, the Vin Scully story, talking about great baseball play-by-play announcers. Also, he was a speechwriter for former President George Herbert Walker Bush, and he hails from upstate New York, and we're going to be talking about that congressional race back in his backyard before the program ends this evening. Also joining us this evening is Ray Hanania, a longtime reporter in the Chicagoland area. He is a talk show host on WJJG Radio in the mornings, and also he's written numerous books, and one of his books is called Arabs of Chicagoland. And the other book, let's put the picture of Ray up one more time. The title of his book is I'm Glad I Look Like a Terrorist, which is a book of humor.
And I have to emphasize that more now.
Over and over again. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about some of the trials and tribulations of people who look like you as the program unfolds this evening. Let's go to Downers Grove, Illinois, however. Joe is listening to us on our broadcast on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead.
How you doing, Bruce? Good
okay.
show.
Thanks.
Okay, I was going to say, what's going to happen to these knowledgeable people? What's going to happen in a year when Bush's tax cuts expire? The tax cuts for the poor people, for the middle-class people, for the rich people, you'd think of 10.2%. Don't forget, President Bush did things that no other president did. Even Bob Brinker, who's not a partisan, said for almost 5 years, he had the unemployment rate between 4 and 5%. He had 57 straight months of job growth, never been done before. And thanks to Barney Frank and a few others, the mortgage crisis appeared. So as far as Bush's tax cuts, they helped this economy for a number of years, which Bob Brinker even said he should have done a little bit more bragging about the economy, which he didn't do. So what I want to find out is what you think is going to happen when Bush's tax cuts expire within a year.
Let's get everybody's response. Right, we'll start with Jim Bohannon.
The economy will go even further down. Keep in mind one thing about stimulus. Stimulus only stimulates if you don't pay for it, which means that you have a choice between jump-starting the economy or exacerbating the already horrendous national debt that is now approaching $50,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. Not an easy choice, but the idea that stimulus stimulates, not if you pay for it. It does not.
5 years straight.
I'm going to tell you what, the Obama tax cut is going to be when we get out of Iraq. Hopefully we do that. And that's going to save us billions, and that is going to save taxpayers a huge amount of money, and I think that that's been part of the problem.
Well, George W. Bush, of whom I was, I think, justifiably critical on many scores, deserves great praise, as the caller says, for, in essence, building on Ronald Reagan's beginnings. These were Reagan tax cuts, what were known pejoratively for a time in the 1980s as Reaganomics. This is what I meant earlier when I talked about a quarter century of prosperity. It began in 1983, marred only by several minor recessions. The reason Bush didn't brag, bragging doesn't come naturally to the Bush family. He's not good at communicating, as the entire cosmos knows. And I do think that he did not receive the credit he should have from a very non-sympathetic press. But I think Jim's point is well taken. These are all, in terms of stimulus or cars for clunkers or any of these half fixes, they are evanescent. They are temporary. We need something permanent, permanent jobs.
Let's go to Jim in South Elgin. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening. The one thing that's never mentioned by Democrats is the litigation problem and the expenses. And there are two states with glaring examples of where one works and where one doesn't. The state of Texas has caps on pain and suffering, which is the punitive part of a lawsuit, nothing to do with actual damages and lost earnings, that sort of thing. And the trial lawyers will tell you, well, those caps don't reduce the premiums. Well, they certainly do. A friend of mine moved from Chicago, where his malpractice bill is going to be $50,000, to Texas, where he's paying $4,000 today for being an internal medicine physician.
Those are annual.
Annual, that's right. And because of the litigation problem in Illinois, all the insurance companies pulled out from doing business, so the physicians had to basically self-insure. So this whole notion of the insurance companies being the problem with the health care costs for physicians is bunk. And unfortunately, the Democrats are in bed with the trial lawyers, and they get a lot of money from them. And this is the pay-to-play that the media doesn't care to talk about.
We've talked about it a lot on my program and others as well. Tort reform is desperately needed here. And I do not understand. Money, remember, only works if it helps you by voter support. And I don't see how money from the trial lawyers can help you buy voter support if you're a Democrat up for re-election in 2010 and you're getting hammered by your opponent on this very issue. I don't see the point of even taking that money.
But are they getting hammered? This is why I get back to the extraordinary self-immolation capacity of the Republican Party. They've not made an issue of this. In fact, several people have said that because tort reform is not understood by the average person, that it should be renamed anti-lawyer abuse or something of that ilk. But the Republican Party, you're right. They should beat this issue to death. When they filibuster the health care, they should make this every other sentence should be tort reform or anti-lawyer abuse, because that
right.
the
maybe,
average person understands.
Maybe the Republican Party should – maybe the right response for the Republican Party is to come up with a good alternative plan for health care, which they haven't done. And I don't think – I'm not against tort reform. I think we should have tort reform. And if Democrats are getting money from the lawyers, what's the difference? The Republicans are getting it from the insurance industry. What's their plan? What is the Republican plan for health care? What is it?
I don't know what it is. Understand it to fix that which is broken. Which is broken is the people not insured today.
Well, also, you know, as we look ahead with this, at the beginning of the program, we went through chapter and verse with some of the specific elements that were in this historic bill that was passed yesterday by the House. But I think everybody at this table knows that what ultimately may make it to the United States Senate is going to be significantly, I don't want to say radically different,
probably.
But I think it's going to be significantly different from this, because there's power within the moderate Democrats, some of whom are up for re-election next year, and there certainly is not 60 votes for this bill in the United States Senate.
No.
But I agree. I think
what's going to be thrown back? I asked somebody that
public
earlier.
The public option is in trouble. I think that's in trouble.
Maybe a co-op option, yeah. Maybe subsidies to provide what amounts to a private sector version of a public
opting
option.
Opting in and opting out. That's
but I'm
one
not going to give up on Barack.
States.
But I'm not going to give up on Barack Obama using. If I have a criticism of President Obama, it's he hasn't been engaged as forcefully as he could be. And I think that we did see him engage at the last minute. He needs to get out there and really work this, and I don't think he has.
But I think for the average American, as opposed to the interest groups and the leaders of both party, public option or no public option is secondary to the stunning, gargantuan, unprecedented cost. Whether it's the Senate bill or the House bill or a hybrid of the two, we are looking at $1 trillion for a program that, again, we don't need and we don't want.
And keep in mind one thing, too. I think Barack Obama has overreacted to the Clinton experience of 16 years ago, where the Clintons had a minutely detailed plan, told Congress, take it or leave it. Congress said, okay, I think we'll leave it. And Barack Obama basically said, let's have health care reform. And pretty much there was no adult supervision on Capitol Hill. And he's reaped the whirlwind from not providing that leadership.
The $1 trillion that we're going to spend on this plan is going to be made up by the money that we are now spending on this plan for people that don't have insurance. It's coming out of our tax money now, and that is where some of the tax savings is going to come. If it goes into a public option to provide health care, I'm in favor of it. I'd rather see the money go positively toward health care rather than as a penalty.
When they say something, you know, one of the groups that everybody goes after and wants to get – our senior citizens, because they are loyal voters. When they hear, and again, it's been repeated over and over again, there's going to be a $400 billion savings from Medicare, okay? I just got on Medicare.
Right.
Okay? What are they taking away? What's being cut? When you talk about $400 billion, what is it that, as a senior citizen, I would be getting that I'm not going to be getting?
Well, it ain't all waste, fraud, and abuse, okay?
Of
because
course
if it
not.
Was, they
Come
could have taken
on,
that out
Jim.
In the first place.
As a speech writer for Bush 41, when I didn't know what else to say, I looked at my computer
fraud.
And I said, waste, fraud, and abuse. You know what? If there was considerable or even extraneous waste, fraud, and abuse, it would have been dealt with decades ago. Bruce, I think you're okay, because I'll vote for George McGovern before those cuts are ever enacted by any kind of Congress.
But again, this is but they talk about this all the time.
Of course they do,
sure
because
they do.
It's a way to avoid the hard truth of this legislation. You know, it was interesting. Polls, several of them released.
Should there be a means test? Do you agree that there should be a means test? Do you believe that high earners who are senior citizens should be paying a tax on their health premiums.
I think
that's something that even John McCain suggested might be a good idea.
Right. I think, and in talking to people who know a lot more about this than I do, the word rationing comes up again and again because you're talking about a program which is going to grow exponentially. Taxes cannot grow exponentially without wrecking the economy. But a final point here. Several polls in the last couple of days, talking to different aspects of the American demographic, the only group that has not seen Obama's support stagger considerably is liberals. They like what they've got. But this is not a leftist country. It is a right-of-center country being governed by a leftist administration.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the tragedy at Fort Hood, Texas.
I'm Felix. I've been doing body art and tattoos for over 15 years. It's amazing. I get people in here all the time who ask me about fading or removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. Up till this year, I've really had nothing to help them that is effective and painless. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy three-step daily fading system. Just a few months, the darkest, deepest pigments, they easily start to fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret. It's my only recommendation if you want to clear the canvas of some real funky body art.
Wrecking Balm, the devastatingly effective tattoo fade system. Undemanding daily fading. Zero pain, zero discomfort.
Call right now for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial of Wrecking Balm at 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206. Fade your tattoo now by calling 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We're now going to switch gears and talk about one of the other big stories of last week, and that was the tragedy and the massacre at Fort Hood, Texas, where 13 American soldiers are dead, 18 are wounded at this moment, the rampage led by Major Hassan has once again focused attention on not only violence in our society, but specifically the perpetrator or the alleged perpetrator of the crime. And it has also brought up the subject of whether or not once someone who is a Muslim, can they be a good Muslim? Can they be a good American? And are there Muslims amongst us that we have to fear? And Ray Hanania, you are not a Muslim.
No.
You're a Palestinian.
Everybody thinks I'm Muslim.
Everybody thinks you're Muslim. But you're a Christian.
Yes.
You're also a veteran of the United States Air Force and Illinois Air National Guard. Your instant reaction when this story happened?
Well, to me, I had three issues. And first of all, I'm an American. It really hurt because to see any act of violence, I think this was the worst act of violence we've actually seen in terms of substance and emotion since September 11th. The second one is being a veteran. The idea that a member of the military would turn on his own people really is abhorrent. I mean, that really is shocking to me. And then as an Arab, it's what I expected, people trying to use this issue and this incident to make political statements. And that's the part that's most disturbing. But it's hard to deal with that issue and make it seem like that you don't care about the substance of 13 people died. That's really the issue. The fact that I'm worried that people are going to take some action against me, yeah, I am worried. And I'm worried about other Arabs and Muslims who are being targeted by what I think is hate speech and angry and really loose, just irresponsible comments like from Senator Lieberman saying this man was a terrorist. This man was a man who snapped, went over the edge, did something terrible, and we shouldn't extrapolate it and say that all Arabs and Muslims are bad.
Well, but that's not what Joe Lieberman said, first of all.
Joe Lieberman said he was a terrorist.
I think there is considerable evidence to indicate that. You cannot definitively say that he was a terrorist, but if, in fact, if it turns out if, in fact, it turns out that he had called for suicide bombings by Muslims, if, in fact, it turns out that he had cheered when a bomb killed American soldiers, if, in fact, it is true that he had been arguing vehemently about how evil the United States is for being involved in Iraq and Afghanistan. First of all, why was he still acting as a counselor.
If
he is acting in a manner designed to be a terrorist, if that's his goal, if that was what he was doing this for, then I would give him what he tried to give. He wanted to be so treated. So
I want to get Kurt's response.
You know, it's interesting you're talking about this. My wife is from Houston. And I had a brother who was in the Air Force, at Kelly Air Force Base in San Antonio. You couldn't pick a more wonderfully patriotic state in the country than the state of Texas. So the irony of this occurring there, I thought, was terrible. The second thing is, we don't know. That's the short answer, right, in terms of what prompted this extraordinary incendiary act. We don't know. He was an officer, and I don't believe that soldiers, in essence, harass officers. So this is what leads me to think, not to know, but to think perhaps that he was not subjected to taunts. But we don't know. And, you know, I understand your point about Lieberman, although, Jim, I think you are correct when you talk about he qualified it. But I'll tell you what appalled me at the other end, and that is the Justice Department and the FBI, in essence, having people say yesterday that they have excluded any scrutiny of possible terrorism. That is a terrible dereliction of duty. We don't know.
Listen, the military should always be vigilant for any individual that acts in an unusual way. They always were like that. When I was in the service during the Vietnam War, I did experience harassment because I was an Arab. There is, in this society, people, Americans, who don't understand Arabs and Muslims.
What was your rank, though?
I was a sergeant. But it wasn't from my superior officers. It was from the people that I spent months with.
Yeah.
They still would not accept me as an Arab.
Well, in fact, this is, I think, an extraordinary—
That's where his discrimination and experience may have focused.
That is a bleeding sore in this country, and I hate it when it occurs against Arabs. I hate it when it occurs against other groups.
Absolutely.
I'll never forget Timothy McVeigh. He blows up a building. Bill Clinton, in essence, that same day, blames 20 million people, good, decent Americans, who listen to Rush Limbaugh. You have someone this year, and they blow up an abortion clinic, and every person who opposes abortion, every white, middle-class, church-going person in the country is pilloried by the national press. Is that right? I don't hear the national press talking about that. I do hear them talking about possible bigotry. Anyone that has bigotry, and this includes the press especially, against any group is unworthy of that vocation. Why don't we judge people as individuals?
I also want to ask, we've talked about what we know, what we really know. Based on what we know or based on what we have read, don't we already know a lot about this guy?
Well, what we've heard. I don't know that all these stories have been necessarily corroborated yet. I've really said before that if, in fact, what we have heard turns out to be the gospel truth,
then why was
he
still in there?
Then
I don't want to go there. I'm not going to go to that word. But what I'm saying is if all of those things that we have read are true, why was he still in the Army? Why was he still a psychologist or psychiatrist in the Army? Why was he getting ready to go overseas?
Listen,
who was watching him?
There
was one report, again, this is a report, that people were afraid to basically call him out and to report him because they feared that they would be viewed
as
anti-Arab.
This is why political correctness is the most god-awful curse to infiltrate our public rhetoric in the last 20
years.
But
nobody has been prosecuted in the military for harassing an Arab. It's never happened. This fear that they were worried that, if we call him out, something's going to happen, it's never happened.
I want to talk more about it. We've got another whole hour. If you're watching us on television, we're going to see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, we have a full hour, and we're going to pick up on this subject on the other side of news, and we're going to be joined by Kenny Rahmeyer of KLBJ in Austin, Texas. He has a lot of people from Fort Hood who listen to his program, listen to that station. We're going to get his perspective when we come back in about 10 minutes. I'm Bruce Dumont. For those, again, watching us on television, we'll see you next week.
Can you hear it?
It's very annoying.
I hear it.
Can you hear that sound? That ringing. That hissing.
I can't get to sleep with it.
I can't concentrate. I hear it constantly.
You can't hide from it.
Everywhere I go, it doesn't go away. It drives me nuts.
It's tinnitus.
A constant ringing in your ear caused by loud machines.
Loud music.
Ah, finally. Quietus.
I love Quietus. Quietus will stop the ringing fast.
Quietus is all-natural, chewable, quiet relief.
Quiet relief so I can work.
I now get a full night's rest. Quietus has helped thousands of people with tinnitus.
Quietus is real, my friend.
Quietus has changed my life.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-413-3739. That's 1-800-413-3739.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 1.95% APY. People think there's a catch. But no, no catch. No teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese. No hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs. Or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
Hey, that stack of money over there with the googly eyes, is that the money you could be saving with Geico?
It's the money I am saving with Geico. He helped me buy this pool table.
Nice. So what else does he do? Can he tell jokes?
Seriously, Kevin, he's a stack of money. He doesn't tell jokes. He just blinks and buys me stuff.
Well, I just thought...
Money can't talk. That's ridiculous. Why do you always take it too far?
Me?
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment and quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries, because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell, trusted everywhere.
Nowadays, all sorts of people are changing their oil.
Motor oil?
Check.
Funnel?
Check.
Hey, champ, don't put the funnel on your head.
Doing your own oil change is a great way to save money. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on Castrol, Mobil 1, Pennzoil, and Valvoline, you could save even more.
All done. Piece of cake.
More people are changing their oil. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, they're changing where they get it, too. Save money. Live better. Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's print ad for an identical product. See store for details.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by talk show hosts Jim Bohannon, Kurt Smith, Ray Hanania, and Kenny Rahmeyer of KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Our program coming to you from the Sirius XM studios in a beautiful west side of Chicago. Nice to have you with us. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com, and our web our email address is btb@museum.tv. Well, we have been discussing the tragedy at Fort Hood, Texas, last week on our broadcast this evening. We're going to continue that discussion, but I wanted to bring into our conversation at this time Kenny Rahmeyer, who follows us on KLBJ every Sunday night from Austin, Texas. And I know, Kenny, that many of your listeners are in the Fort Hood area, and you've spent some time last night, and will tonight be talking about it as well. And I wanted to get a sense from Austin, Texas, what's been the reaction there to the tragedy at Fort Hood?
Bruce, thanks. Great to be with you. You know, KLBJ has had a special relationship with Fort Hood for several years. As you mentioned, a lot of listeners up in the Killeen, Texas area, but our listeners have contributed thousands of dollars for phone cards for the Fort Hood troops stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan to use over the holidays. This coming Friday is our collection day. It'll be our 7th year of helping to buy phone cards for the troops at Fort Hood. So a very special relationship. Caller sentiment, I would say, since all this broke Thursday afternoon, you know, ranges from those who are confident that the alleged shooter was a terrorist to callers who acknowledge that the military's mental health resources are probably ripping at the seams and that the alleged shooter could have had what's been now called compassion fatigue. There are those who believe that the military has been too politically correct in their dealings with this guy. And then there's probably callers who say this guy was an Islamic nutcase on a mission to kill his fellow soldiers.
Ray Hanania joins us in Chicago. He is a Palestinian. He is a Christian, not a Muslim. He's written a number of books, including Arabs in Chicagoland. And we have been talking with him in the first hour of our broadcast. And we continue, Ray. Tell us, if you will, what your perspective is as to how Muslims in the military, should they be treated any differently than anyone else in the light of this incident at Fort Hood?
You know, obviously, I don't think they should be treated any differently. I served during the military. I'm a member of the Arab Veterans Organization, the Association of Patriotic Arab Americans in the military. We have thousands of members. I think there are 3,550 Muslims in the military. More than 3,500 Arabs who are Christian and Muslim in the military. The last incident involving an Arab in the military that I remember was Mike Mansour, the Navy SEAL, who fell on his grenade to save the lives of 7 or 8 other American soldiers fighting with him. So the only thing I object to is elevating this to look at the rest of the Arabs and Muslims like somehow we're a fifth column and we're not patriotic. The vast majority are very patriotic, and they can be depended on to protect their fellow soldiers.
But in this particular case, I want to get everybody's reaction. I'll start with Jim Bohannon. There were enough signs that this guy should have been watched. This guy should have been stopped.
This guy should have been stopped, and this guy should have been watched. And if you had somebody in there who was a wild, crazy man, a militia type, who was a Christian, watch him, or an anarchist, or whomever. It wasn't his religion that made him worthy of being watched. It was some of the things he was saying and stating, supporting violence against American armed forces. Keep in mind something about Muslims around the world. The vast majority of them live in free societies, and we're talking here about places like Indonesia, India, which I think is the third largest Islamic population in the world, North America, Western Europe, Turkey, and they do so in a very not only benign but completely beneficial, productive, and cooperative basis. So there's nothing inherent in the religion that says that you cannot live in a free and a stable and prosperous manner.
Kurt Smith also joins us. Your reaction to how the military should be reacting to this, and will everyone be on extra special alert? And will Muslims and should Muslims be given a special look now?
I'm not sure what the reaction will be. I can't imagine that there won't be extra vigilance in light of this. I don't believe that Muslims deserve extra scrutiny simply because of their religion. I think we have in this country and today entirely too much emphasis on things that divide us, both in terms of income and race and sex. This whole concept of sexual and ethnic identity, I think, has been extraordinarily harmful to the United States. This is not how we won World War II. It is not how we went to the moon. And in terms of saying, well, this person must be guilty because he belongs to Group A, this person innocent because he belongs to Group B, I can't think of anything more antithetical to the United States than that. And maybe if we had some public officials in this country who would precisely say what unites us far surmounts what divides us, we could get beyond this unbelievable fracturing of the American soul.
Kenny, what's the tone of your callers last night on the show?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, some confident this guy was a terrorist. Those who acknowledge that there may be issues associated with compassion fatigue. Clearly, Bruce, a lot of listeners believe that the military has been too politically correct in their dealings with this guy, and I know you all talked about this a little bit before the news break, that the Army just didn't act on some of the red flags that we've heard about quickly enough. And we know that Senator Lieberman, and I also read a member of the House Armed Services Committee, both going to look into why the Army didn't act on some of these red flags that we've heard about.
Well, one of the things that really came out of some of the investigation, we're now going back to 2001, the September 11th investigation. You will recall there were the FBI reports that were coming from the FBI in Phoenix, Arizona, that were falling on deaf ears in Washington, D.C. And one of the thoughts that was suggested during that investigation was that maybe on the receiving end in Washington, D.C., there was an element of political correctness that wasn't really taking seriously the reports from the field agents. And because the field agents may have mentioned the ethnicity and the religion of those that were taking these flight lessons, that maybe they just dismissed it. And there was an element of political correctness that might have been involved, might have been involved in that. And I want to get Ray's reaction to that and whether or not, again, as an American, are you concerned about that?
Well, listen, first of all, I don't think anybody should question my loyalty because I'm an Arab or a Muslim.
I don't question my loyalty.
I agree with what Jim said about the violence. If there had been some evidence, I think question my loyalty when there is real evidence that I'm going to do something. But let me just say something about these reports that you brought up. There are other people who say that the military was more arrogant, that this country was more arrogant, that how could those people who ride camels and live in a cave, how are they going to hurt us? I think there was some of that racism involved in the analysis of those reports, too.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289, talking tonight about the massacre at Fort Hood, Texas.
The best age for your child to learn to read is during the first 5 years of life. Kathleen discovered this fact firsthand.
A friend of ours recommended the Your Baby Can Read series when we had our first child, Jacob. Never thought anything of it. We plopped him down in front of it.
Your Baby Can Read worked amazingly well.
When Jacob was 3 years old, he was reading at second grade level. He turned 5 in July, went to kindergarten, and in 3 weeks he was moved to first grade.
Kathleen knows it's no coincidence.
Because we have 3 children and all are reading on a high level. School is very easy. Straight A students, maybe 1 or 2 children, but all 3, probably a successful video. So bam, it worked.
Did Kathleen have to work at it?
No, I didn't have to do a thing. Your Baby Can Read definitely gives them a life skill that can never be taken away from them. It's been invaluable.
For a limited time, you can receive a completely risk-free trial of the Your Baby Can Read program. Call now and we'll also include 3 free learning gifts with your risk-free trial. Call 1-800-508-3105, 800-508-3105, 800-508-3105.
From Austin, Texas to Boise, Idaho, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Eureka, California. Anthony is listening to us. Go ahead. You're listening on KGOE tonight.
KGOE in Eureka. Friends, thank you for the program. First of all, I want to express my deepest sympathies and condolences for this massacre, 43 shootings and deaths. But let's look at this. Isn't it ironic? Friends, isn't it ironic that we're talking about an American Palestinian psychiatrist who is overwhelmed and went crazy? Isn't it ironic that you expect an American psychiatrist of Palestinian ancestry who's taken the Hippocratic Oath and is listening to the post-traumatic stress syndromes of the troops and then expect him to go to the Middle East, put him in harm's way, and shoot up his ancestors? The point is this, friends. He, you, I cannot trust Protestant American imperialism. Actually, it's non-nation state, corporate, predator, killer imperialism.
Mm. Kurt Smith. Gosh, that's interesting. Every president except John F. Kennedy has been Protestant. I guess you don't like this country very much, do you?
Hey, listen to me, friend. If you don't like this country, we're going to save this country.
I do love this country, sir. I would think you have the problem here, perhaps not us.
He's a Catholic, not a Protestant.
Pardon me?
His point was,
my point was, if you'd listen instead of spewing hate, that every president except for John F. Kennedy was Protestant. And in fact, they're still checking votes from 1960 as far as that's concerned. So the culture of the country has largely been Protestant. The tradition has largely been Protestant. You may hate that fact, but the fact is irrefutable.
I think most
people are quite delighted indeed is the case.
I don't think he was slandering Protestants. And ironically, I happen to be a Protestant Arab.
What did he say? Protestant imperialism?
I think he was using it as an example that there's a bigger power in this country. But I don't agree with it. But,
let's go to James listening to us in KLBJ, Austin, Texas. Go ahead.
Hey guys,
Cedar Park,
I'm one of the
Texas.
Lucky ones that gets to listen to Kenny every week, by the way.
Good.
But I'm afraid that we're going to get to a point where we're going to have to define the word cult, and then we're going to have to investigate if at least a part of Islam is not becoming a cult. I mean, words mean things, and every definition I know of a cult, Islam falls under that. And if someone is a member of the religion, if they sit by and condone this, or if they just tolerate it, they're a part of the problem.
Who's tolerating it and who's condoning it? I mean, by that reasoning, David Koresh would make all Christians suspect. Because much of a wacko David Koresh was, he still considered himself to be a Christian.
But to Jim, he did.
But any Christian who sat out here and heard about David Koresh was appalled and would speak up
most Muslims and Arabs are appalled at what this guy did. Nobody supports him. I'm appalled at Al-Qaeda. I'm appalled at Osama bin Laden.
Up.
And I'll tell you, the majority are there. It's not a cult.
What I hear is when something like this happens, the first thing that every Muslim that I hear speaking on this subject, all they're worried about is this going to cause problems for other Muslims?
Are other Muslims
going to be picked on? Are other Muslims going to be targeted? And that's the problem that we're discussing, and that's ridiculous.
I tell you what, I'm concerned about anybody who is innocent, who is picked on and blamed for any kind of crime.
Actually, he has a point in the sense that religious leaders, who often don't reflect their flock, but Protestant, Jewish, and Muslim religious leaders over the last several days, their fixation has been largely about what he talked about, and that is we need to avoid any kind of anti-Muslim bias, which I applaud, but what has been missing is precisely what he talked about.
And yet I have
heard
statements.
Really counts here.
Folks, we got to go to
college.
I have heard statements that said exactly that they are appalled and angered
across
by
the board.
Yeah.
We've got to go to El Paso, Texas. Robert is listening to us on KTSM. Let's hear from another part of Texas. Go ahead.
I'm originally from Chicago, back in the Fahey Flynn days.
Oh, great. One of our great newscasters.
Yeah, but I'm from here close to Fort Bliss. And we had an incident like that where an individual was deployed from Iraq. He came back from Iraq, came into El Paso here, got in his pickup truck and rammed the back of a car and killed a young lady. He was never debriefed. They just let him off the C-130 and took his bags, went home. So I think the military dropped the ball on this, and too many red flags. I think this gentleman was a whack job, and he just, he lost it. And the military should have picked up on all these red flags. Because let me tell you, I've talked to soldiers here. They say, we don't make fun of our majors or our sergeants or anything. You know, how they say they were picking on them. I cannot believe that.
They don't? Well, I can't believe that people don't pick on their fellow soldiers, but
that I understand. That they said yes. I've talked to military GIs.
Kenny, let's go to you. Your sense on the nature of calls that you took primarily last evening, and you're hearing on the other shows on KLBJ. Is there general agreement that the military dropped the ball on their screening of this guy?
Don't know if there's general agreement. There's certainly that sentiment. And I got to throw this in. I think this is going to fan the flames on some of the passion that we've heard so far tonight. This coming from the Associated Press, that the alleged Fort Hood shooter apparently attended the same Virginia mosque as two 9/11 hijackers at a time when there was a radical imam preaching there. You can bet when that news hits, those who believe this guy was a terrorist and he had an agenda and he's linked to others, et cetera, that's going to come out in spades.
So you think this is the opening of a scenario or discussions that would ask whether or not there are other potential sleeper cells in the United States, perhaps on military bases?
Well, look, there's been speculation to that, and if our senior senator, Kay Bailey Hutchison, has said There's no evidence of that. Obviously, the military is looking at everything. I'm just saying when that news hits, when people understand that there may have been, I'm not saying there is, I'm reporting what the Associated Press is saying tonight, there may have been times when this guy is attending the same mosque as some of the 9/11 hijackers. That's all some of these folks are going to need to hear, Bruce.
Yep.
Kenny, do you believe, though, that that is going to be a major factor, though, in determining what this killer was really all about? I mean, shouldn't there be more evidence? That should be a good indicator. Look at the circumstance. Was he pushed to do this? You know, Muslims don't have the same number of churches that they can go to. I mean, they only have a limited number of mosques in this country, and most cities in this country won't even allow you to build a mosque. As a Christian, I can go to hundreds of churches, but Muslims, they have very few places to go. It's not surprising to me that somebody might go to a mosque where there might be a preacher who they don't agree with. It happens a lot.
Let's go to Brent in El Paso, Texas, listening to us on KTSM. Go ahead. You're on Beyond the Beltway.
Yeah, how you doing? Basically, I would mention to your screener, I picked up an article the other day, and it had a short bio under each victim's name.
Yes.
And after you read some of these names and what they did in life, I'm not going to really go there with this. I feel sorry for this guy because he got picked on or something. Because hell, I've got picked on all through my life. Doesn't mean I'm going to go out and hurt somebody like that.
Right.
It's really sad. You should read some of those bios under some of those victims.
Well, we've read. There are three of the victims of Fort Hood that came from the Chicagoland area, and so yeah. We've had some special focus, obviously, on them, including a young female. Recruit who was pregnant, on her way to be shipped out, I believe, next week. So these horror stories do exist. Let's go to Jerry, listening to us in Livingston, Tennessee, listening to us tonight on the flagship. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Yeah, you know, something you said earlier was the truth, though. Pre-9/11, attorneys for the FBI, they were afraid they were going to get targeted for ethnic profiling, and we remember how that administration went against anybody or everything that they thought was racially profiling. But, this is definitely an act of terrorism. The man planned this out. He went to an area on the base where he knew the people didn't have any weapons, where they were the most vulnerable. He went right at them and was shooting them. And according to what people said, that he was Allahu Akbar. Now, I don't know that he said that, but there was witnesses there that said that he said that. And Senator Lieberman is correct for saying it's an act of terrorism. John Kerry called our troops terrorists. John Murtha called our Marines cold-blooded murderers. You know, and what took the president so long to even speak about this the other day, instead of talking about, you know, shout-outs to a medicine man and stuff? Mm. I just say, what was all this? He couldn't.
Kurt Smith.
Well,
Kurt Smith, and then Jim.
The president has a problem at times with priorities, as we talked about. This report, I hope, will be studied and fair, but the problem that will exist even once his fate has been resolved, and we were talking about this off air, we have had now, since at least 2001, 2002, a general consensus that both in Iraq and possibly Afghanistan, we're trying to win on the cheap. We don't have enough troops in either place, which means that our troops, in essence, have to go back with greater frequency and for greater intensity and for greater length. And I don't know to what extent mental deterioration was involved in this case, but it's only common sense that if troops have to go back again and again and again, we may see more incidents like this, or at least this may facilitate
more
incidents.
But again, if we're talking about those type of stresses, or if we're talking about whether or not, and again, he opposed the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. If we get in these side issues as to whether the war is right or wrong,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, do we have enough men there to do the job?
Well,
But to me, looking at what happened, the focus of the issue here is, are there enough qualified healthcare professionals, psychiatric healthcare professionals in the United States Army, and what is their measure of determining whether or not they're sane? That's what we've got here.
Look, we've got enough.
One guy who was Muslim, and this guy fell through the cracks.
We don't have
enough. How
does
a guy like this fall through the cracks?
Well, we don't have enough people of any military occupational specialty or rank. We don't have enough people in the military. And we have got to face up to the fact that in fairness and in necessity, we need a military draft.
And we need more Muslims if we're going to be successful in our war against terrorism. Back shortly from Chicago.
Okay, that's 1196. Whoa, what are you doing?
What? I'm giving you cash.
But you're pulling the little guy apart.
Oh, this? No, it's just the money I'm saving with Geico.
But he's the sack of money with the googly eyes. He has a face.
Yeah, but he's money. And now I'm spending it. Here, take a bill.
Oh, actually, that didn't seem to hurt him at all.
No, we do this all the time.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Nowadays, all sorts of people are changing their oil.
Motor oil?
Check.
Funnel?
Check.
Hey, champ, don't put the funnel on your head.
Doing your own oil change is a great way to save money. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on Castrol, Mobil 1, Pennzoil, and Valvoline, you could save even more.
All done. Piece of cake.
More people are changing their oil. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, they're changing where they get it, too. Save money. Live better. Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's print ad for an identical product. See store for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Let me introduce our guests. Jim Bohannon is here. He is a talk show host on the Westwood One Radio Network, an inductee into the National Radio Hall of Fame, who was in town last night for the big Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremonies, doing his wonderful job as announcer and host of the Backstage Show along with George Norrie. Always nice to have you with us. Also, Kurt Smith joins us. He, too, was part of the broadcast last night. He's a member of the National Radio Hall of Fame Steering Committee. He inducted Harry Callis, the great voice, late great voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, into the Radio Hall of Fame. He's also a talk show host in upstate New York. He's also author of many, many sports books, including the latest called Pull Up a Chair, the Vin Scully story. He's regarded as probably the most noted baseball broadcasting announcer or researcher and author in the United States. Always good to have you with us. And also joining us this evening is Ray Anania. He is a talk show host on WJJG every morning from 8 to 10 o'clock in the morning. He's a former reporter, and he has written a number of books, including Arabs of Chicagoland. And Kenny Raymeyer joins us. He is a talk show host on KLBJ. He does the weekends with Kenny Raymeyer show every Saturday night and Sunday night immediately after Beyond the Beltway, and he joins us as well. And we've got South Bend, Indiana on the line. Jim is listening to WSBT tonight, and you're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. Just there's two sides to a coin also. When you have the 9/11 Commission report called the 100,000 plus civilian deaths in Iraq, no link to 9/11. We have a military presence in 137 different countries, DOD.gov. And is it any mystery if you kill 100,000 innocent people, 9/11 Commission report, that they may be upset and fight back? Isn't it? Would Bush and Cheney be considered terrorists, since the 9/11 Commission report clearly stated that there's 100,000 plus civilians, women and children in Iraq that were murdered?
Murdered?
By a Christian
I take serious
fanatic.
Exception to that term. They were not murdered.
Well, I'm going to disagree fanaticism. With my colleague. I think that there was.
By the way, Jim, you have brought up a subject that has been discussed off the air this evening, and we're now going to put it on the air, and that is just the use of the term terrorism, and you think it may be abused, Ray.
Well, I think terrorism, we're in a new day where terrorism has, in my opinion, a very important meaning, and I don't think that every act of violence necessarily becomes an act of terrorism. I think that we dilute the impact of terrorism when we make rush to judgments about whether this guy actually organized it, whether there were a group of people working with him, or whether he just snapped for whatever reason.
He snapped, it doesn't matter. The fact is that if he snapped or did what he did for whatever reason, he still did so in a manner calculated to terrorize.
Well, you know, the word you used was necessarily. We don't know. It may be.
Right.
Certainly the act was of terrorism. Was the intent terrorist?
No, I think
we were
that,
talking, for example, about late 1944, Malmedy, the Nazis execute with machine guns 90 American soldiers spur of the moment? Was it plotted 2 days earlier? Was it plotted
crime.
2 minutes
That's
earlier?
That doesn't matter. That's a war crime.
A death is a death is a death.
Absolutely.
So is the war against terrorism.
But you can't fight. There's a difference between violence. I think that this wasn't. We could not have stopped him by planning a strategic response to terrorism. We should have stopped him the way we do anybody who shows signs of breaking, who's losing control. All the things that I've heard aren't just that he was Arab and Muslim and supported suicide bombing. This guy was losing his mind and getting upset.
Terrorism was defined by the fact that he chose to shoot as many people as he could in a confined space. It could have been for any reason whatsoever, including being deranged. You could be deranged, apolitical, and still be a terrorist.
Gentlemen, let me interject with this, because I think this is important to put in context. As many of you saw, General George Casey, Chief of Staff of the United States Army, was on the Sunday morning shows today, and this is what he had to say. We have to be careful because we can't jump to conclusions now based on little snippets of information that come out. And frankly, I am worried. Not worried, but I am concerned that this increased speculation could cause a backlash against some of our Muslim soldiers. And I've asked our Army leaders to be on the lookout for that. It would be a shame, as well as a great tragedy, if this were the case. It would be a shame if our diversity became a casualty as well. End of quote.
Diversity is the biggest fix-all, which means absolutely nothing in American society. If you don't know what else to say, you say diversity. Diversity can be a problem if what separates us becomes more important than what divides us.
Kurt, do you acknowledge, and I want to get everybody's reaction to this, that if we are going to be successful in the war on terror, mm-hmm. we need a population of Muslims. There's 3 million Muslims in the United States?
7 million Muslims in the U.S.
Four and a half million
Arabs.
Okay. We need the vast, vast majority of them to be on our side.
I agree with that.
To be American.
And I have
But that's no different than any other group, Bruce.
I understand that. And also the question is, do they have to be treated any differently at this particular time?
No, not for better and not for worse. And I think most Americans would agree. That's the antithesis of political correctness, where you say because of the sexual or racial identity with which we happen to agree, we're going to give preferential treatment to one group over another.
That's where we share a lot too. I mean, I agree with that. I agree that we do not draw the line and say, wow, let's push aside. I mean, the debate that upsets me in this country is, should we ban Arabs and Muslims from service in the military? I don't think that's even a discussion.
That's not even. No one is
suggesting that.
I'm getting emails. It's been talked about on talk radio. It's been talked about on cable TV.
No responsible person has ever suggested that.
Well, they have suggested it.
Not responsible people.
I'm hearing it, but they're not responsible people are also not saying that this guy was doing all kinds of things, that he supported suicide bombings. We don't know what he supported.
We don't know.
We don't know.
That's the key.
Let me restate the comment.
I'm not knocking Jim.
Let me restate the comment. Let me restate the comment that had started this whole thing. I said, if, capital I, capital F, it is determined that what we have heard about this man is in fact correct, then, and only then, may we determine that this one person acted as a terrorist. That does not mean that any other person of any faith was in any way implicated in this. It simply means that if what we have heard is true, then he was a terrorist. And I am quite willing to wait for confirmation to declare that he is.
I want to go to Kenny. Your response, Kenny.
I got to say I agree with Jim to the extent that I've already received hate mail because I'm not willing to prejudge and go ahead and declare this guy a terrorist. There's a local state rep whose district includes Fort Hood, who said he believes this guy is a terrorist, and his definition is because it was premeditated, period. That's the end of it. I wonder, though, as we're kicking this around a little bit, I wonder if we're going to have to expand, or somebody in Congress is going to call on the military to expand don't ask, don't tell to include your religious background.
You know, I laugh, but I'm not sure I should be laughing.
One of the other things we talked about again that we've talked about in the past on this program is if you're going to be successful in the war against terror, the Army has said, the chiefs of staff have said in the past, we need more Muslims. We need more people who can speak Arabic.
We need interpret.
We need more people.
That's not,
we need more people with their ears to the ground. across the around the world and in the United States to make sure there is not another terrorist
but
attack.
That's not what the military, and that's not what the quotes you read suggest. What they suggest to me, diversity trumps all, therefore engage in this kind of political correction which divides and fractures and prefers one group over the other. He should not
be
saying that
say
at
whatever,
this point.
But you also, the general can say, I mean, the general said what you expect the general to say, you know, on the Sunday morning talk shows. But in the barracks of military installations all around the world tonight, I will bet that people are giving a second look to anyone who's a Muslim.
Yes, they are. But as long as you don't base official policy on that,
Then you have no
reason to assume that all of these Arabs and all of these Muslims will not be a willing part of the war on terror.
If I could just interject with the military, it matters enormously, too, to the average guy, the average GI in the military and all the branches, whether they feel they have a sympathetic head in the government, someone as a president who understands them, who sides with them, who understands the military. They felt that enormously of Ronald Reagan. They felt that enormously of my former boss, Bush 41. I think it's fair to say they do not, by and large, share that view about a Barack Obama. This is a test of leadership for him.
He will be in Texas on Tuesday. Kenny, tell us more about what you know about that service.
You know, it's going to be a memorial service, and you're right, the president will be here. I'm sure all the other likely suspects as far as dignitaries. You know, there's clearly, at least based on press reports, Bruce, a sense of betrayal by some to all this. However, I can tell you, Fort Hood, a close-knit Army family there pulling together to honor the victims and the first responders, by the way, and then to support the wounded. All the family members of the victims and the survivors, you know, it's some very proud traditions there. The 1st Army, the 1st Cavalry, the 3rd Armored Cavalry, the 41st Field Artillery Brigade, some very strong and proud traditions there at Fort Hood. And so, yeah, that's going to be, I would think, the time to the other participants' point here for President Obama to come in, have some of the family members cry on his shoulder, as we saw with President Reagan when the space shuttle went down and so forth. Maybe that's the opportunity for the president to bond a little more with the military. I agree that he needs that.
This is going to be a significant moment in his presidency, the way this is frankly covered and the way he reacts, just as I think Bill Clinton's participation in Oklahoma City, at least in the public ceremony. I agree with Kurt that he really went after talk radio in a very unfair way. But the public gathering, the public moment of sympathy, I thought was handled well by President Clinton and Barack Obama. Let us hope that he's up to the challenge Tuesday in Austin. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
The best age for your child to learn to read is during the first 5 years of life. Kathleen discovered this fact firsthand.
A friend of ours recommended the Your Baby Can Read series when we had our first child, Jacob. Never thought anything of it. We plopped him down in front of it.
Your Baby Can Read worked amazingly well.
When Jacob was 3 years old, he was reading at second grade level. He turned 5 in July, went to kindergarten, and in 3 weeks he was moved to first grade.
Kathleen knows it's no coincidence.
Because we have 3 children and all are reading on a high level. School is very easy. Straight A students, maybe 1 or 2 children, but all 3, probably a successful video. So bam, it worked.
Did Kathleen have to work at it?
No, I didn't have to do a thing. Your Baby Can Read definitely gives them a life skill that can never be taken away from them. It's been invaluable.
For a limited time, you can receive a completely risk-free trial of the Your Baby Can Read program. Call now and we'll also include 3 free learning gifts with your risk-free trial. Call 1-800-508-3105. 800-508-3105. 800-508-3105.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. By the way, Kurt Smith and Jim Bohannon, as well as yours truly, we were all at the Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremonies last night at the Renaissance Hotel, carried locally by WGN and WLS Radio and about 35 stations all over the United States, including XM Satellite Radio. It really was a great night of celebration of American radio. If you'd like to see some pictures and little souvenirs, you can go to the radiohof.org website. That's radiohof.org website. And again, starting tomorrow, we're going to have a rebroadcast of the Radio Hall of Fame. And also, there's a lot of great pictures there of what transpired last evening. Rush Limbaugh was there. Dennis Miller was there. Willard Scott was there. Wendy Williams, who has now a daily show on Fox. It was a great night for radio. And also, during the pre-broadcast announcement, I had a chance to make the official word is that the Illinois General Assembly has appropriated $6 million to the Museum of Broadcast Communications, so we will be able to complete the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And our thanks not only to Governor Quinn for his support of that, but also Illinois State Senate President John Cullerton. It would not happen without them. We sincerely appreciate their support. You've heard me talk about this over the last several years because of the problems we've had in the past on this project. But again, our bad days are behind us, and we look forward and we thank them very much and the General Assembly for making that generous appropriation to the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Charles, listening to us in XM Radio, calling from New York. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks again for taking my call.
Good.
I was a little concerned about that definition of as long as it's premeditated in any way, it's a terrorist, if I understood correctly. The fact of the matter is that if you go by that standard, anybody who goes postal, a lot of them may have thought about their crime, may have planned, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't necessarily automatically mean that everybody who goes postal is a terrorist. So I think it's counterproductive and sloppy to use broad definitions like that for the word terrorist. And my other point is specifically with regards to the remark that, well, we're going to have to start looking closely at people of Muslim faith in the military. That's an inevitable byproduct of this. The fact of the matter is that if you had a serviceman, a very religious Christian, pro-life Christian, go crazy in the head and go out and start shooting, let's say, a provider, a physician who performs abortions, I don't think that the logical or proper response to that would be to realize that just out of realism it is now necessary to keep tighter tabs on Christians. The fact of the matter is religion is not a reason to do anything. Religious beliefs are merely used as an excuse by certain persons for their crimes, but you can't point to religion. And you can't point to believers in that religion as being associated with a group of moronic or evil people who use religion as an excuse for their crime.
Charles, Ray's got a comment for you.
I think, Charles, you said it perfectly. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that we shouldn't look at this as in some broad way. I think we should look at the facts around this guy. If there are other people involved, arrest him, nail him, prosecute him, look at our system. And, but don't turn this into keeping Arabs and Muslims out of the military or somehow question our loyalty. I think you're right.
Kurt?
I agree totally with the exception of one statement that the caller made. If this had been done by someone who was a devout Christian, the proper response would not have been to tar all Christians. The proper response would be, you're correct, but the media would use it in precisely that way.
Let's go to Austin, Texas. Sam is listening to us on KLVJ. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, by the way, the last caller made some outstanding points. I wanted to point out that I think there's a lack of an awareness that's shifted in this country towards what potential threats. And I remember after September 11th, if I took my large cargo trailer downtown, security would immediately come in upon me. And if I parked on a street nearby and, want to know what I was doing, what my business was there. And that sort of level of awareness was very apparent, seemed very appropriate back then because the threat was very real, but the threat doesn't seem real, and I think there's a failure here to, not because of the man's religion, but let's speculate that if some of the things that have been said about him were true by some of his affiliates, then perhaps there was some failure on the part of officials in the right situation to pinpoint just an extremist sort of bad intention, regardless of the motive, regardless of what. And I don't agree that I think it also is counterproductive to label him as a terrorist. We can just call him someone who lost his mind and wanted to kill a bunch of people. We need to find out the motive.
Let's Jim Bohannon.
You do not have to have a particular motive or a particular ideology to be a terrorist. If, let's say, because I'm just wacky, maybe I don't even have a political philosophy, but if I walk out into a crowded Chicago street, say one of the street festivals here that they hold, and I just start shooting people, my goal is to terrorize in that I want to kill as many people as I can and frighten many others who are nowhere near the area. I am terrorizing. Terrorism is not defined by ideology or a particular point of view. It is defined by your actions.
Well, the Bible delineates between the sin and the sinner. This is the sin, and the sin, we really don't care, in essence, to those families that have lost their loved ones, what the motive and the
impetus was. When we look back on this story a year from now, Kenny Reimeier, do we think we're going to see a significant change in the way the U.S. Army handles its psychiatric assessments of its psychiatrists?
Well, that's tough. I'm not in the military, Bruce. I'm going to go off of what I've heard General Casey and others seemingly in the loop that have said about this, that they're going to go back and try to relook at everything and understand why they couldn't pick up on the red flag sooner. And you would think there's clearly got to be some focus on those caregivers, the mental health workers working with the wounded vets and so forth. They've got to learn from this experience. They've got to.
Kenny, thank you very much for joining us. Kenny Reimeier from KLBJ Radio. If you're listening to us on KLBJ, Kenny's going to come up right after the 5 o'clock, or actually in about 5 minutes after the newscast. And our thanks also this evening to Jim Bohannon from Westwood One Radio Network and the National Radio Hall of Fame, and also Ray Hanania from WJJG, author of the book Arabs in Chicagoland, and Kurt Smith, author of the book Pull Up a Chair, The Vin Scully Story, also, as you can see, politically astute, having been a speechwriter for President George Herbert Walker Bush. Our thanks to Tom Vera-Cruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
I'm Felix. I've been doing body art and tattoos for over 15 years. It's amazing. I get people in here all the time who ask me about fading or removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. Up till this year, I've really had nothing to help that is effective and painless. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy three-step daily fading system. In just a few months, the darkest, deepest pigments, they easily start to fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret. It's my only recommendation if you want to clear the canvas of some real funky body art.
Wrecking Balm, the devastatingly effective tattoo fade system. Undemanding daily fading. Zero pain, zero discomfort.
Call right now for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial of Wrecking Balm at 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206. Fade your tattoo now by calling 1-800-507-4206. That's 1-800-507-4206.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 1.95% APY. People think there's a catch. But no, no catch. No teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese. No hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment and quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries, because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell. Trusted everywhere.
It's quite a proposition when you think about it. You contact GEICO and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. 15 minutes, simple as that. Something they've been doing for over 70 years. You want car insurance and you want extra money in your wallet, done and done. Now, not only do you have some nice car insurance, you've got plenty of money to spend on some tasty biscuits. Or flowers for your mum. Or whatever it is you fancy.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Nowadays, all sorts of people are changing their oil.
Motor oil?
Check.
Funnel?
Check.
Hey, champ, don't put the funnel on your head.
Doing your own oil change is a great way to save money. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on Castrol, Mobil 1, Pennzoil, and Valvoline, you could save even more.
All done. Piece of cake.
More people are changing their oil. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, they're changing where they get it, too. Save money. Live better. Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's print ad for an identical product. See store for details.